This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard.
Not billiard.
What?
Not the billiards. It was...
Come on, everybody.
What?
Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Hmm?
Sharon Lawson Bram, skid of a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I've wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Put your mouth to scrappy Canadian.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Tuesday evening, battling a cold. So I apologize if my voice goes up, down, left, or right, and cracks like Peter Brady, but here we are. But what I'm going to do is bring in my PIC. He is the Russ Griswold to my Nick Papagiorgio, and that is Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. There you go. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 423 of the Mothership, baby.
That's it. No, nothing for my Vegas vacation reference.
You took the one or vacation reference that I don't remember.
You never seen Vegas Vacation? Have you seen it?
I have, but that was a long time ago. I just watched Christmas Vacation the other day. Vegas Nick Papagiorgio is the mob guy, right? Isn't that the mob guy?
No, it's a Russ Griswold's alter ego when he wins all the money, and that's his fake name, Mr. Papagiorgio.
Oh, right.
So and what's saying? You're the poor schlep to my rich Nick Bondurant. Get it now?
I'm the real guy to the fake guy, exactly. Welcome, everyone. 420.
Anyway, you should definitely go see Vegas Vacation in theaters right now if you haven't seen it yet.
In theaters? I know I just watched a 1994 Raw today, but do we have to actually go back? Is that when that came out, 1994?
No, I was later than that. I remember being, I think it was in high school when that came out.
Let me take a look. Well, anyway.
I remember it being pretty good, though. Like, it was 97. It was, I was surprised at how good it was. I think it holds up as one of the better vacation movies. I mean, they're all good, but anyway.
They are all good. And, you know, you got me to watch, you randomly said in one of our chats eons ago, you were home one night, I think it was a Saturday, and you were watching it wasn't really a reboot. I guess it's another movie in the series, technically.
Right.
The new one.
Ross is the...
Is the grown up and and that was actually really good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah,
it was actually I
was fine. I don't know if it was really good.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I liked.
It was passable enough.
Drunk and sexy Christina Applegate throwing up on everybody. I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. You know, Clark and
I'd probably rank it last of the five.
Well, I would too, but it wasn't putrid. At least they went the right avenue and didn't make it a reboot.
Right.
That's offensive.
I mean, I don't know who looks worse, Chevy Chase or Beverly D'Angelo.
They both look like Chevy Chase. They both look like Aunt Edna is what they look like.
My lord. Griswolds do not have good genes when it comes to aging.
I mean, there's been so many different Rusties and so many different...
All right, we'll rank them. Who's your favorite Rusty?
What's his name?
Big Bang Theory?
No, why can't I think? From the first movie. What's his name? He was in...
Anthony Michael Hall?
Anthony Michael Hall, yeah.
Yeah, you like him the best? I don't know. I thought, what's his name there? David from Roseanne was pretty good in the Christmas Vacation. He doesn't really do much, I guess.
I mean, European Vacation Rusty wasn't too bad.
I don't know. The kids in European Vacation are all weird looking. They're all cracked out.
They were weird looking. And the Audrey in...
I hate European Vacation, Audrey.
She's dead. She had like a weird disease. Like she had something. She died in her 20s, or maybe it was later than maybe in her 30s. But
thanks for making me feel real good.
So now you feel like shit. I hope you're happy. No,
you're still the worst.
The first Audrey, she kind of vanished off the face of the earth, huh?
I mean, the best Audrey is Vegas Vacation. She's the best looking Audrey. And then Juliette Lewis wasn't bad either.
Juliette Lewis wasn't bad. No. What about the ancillary characters? Christmas, probably, with all the, you know. Is Rusty still in the Navy?
Yeah, oh, Christmas definitely had the best ensemble. I mean, Cousin Eddie's good in all of them, but he was like, that was his peak, was Christmas Vacation.
It's my favorite, drinking the PBR while he's fucking flushing the shit out of the fucking camper.
Yeah, you get the boss, too. I mean, you know, yeah, you got Elaine, you got, yeah, they're all really good in Christmas
Vacation. Oh, my God, Elaine and that asshole next door with the fucking stereo system? Yeah. Now, Christmas Vacation's very good. That's one of my definitely watches during the season, along with, of course, the 24 Hours of a Christmas Story on TNT.
I'd say that's my favorite. I'd say that, then the first one, then Vegas, then European, then
the new one.
And I, well, Vegas and the original are close for me. I really like Vegas.
The story in European Vacation I like. The actors were not great, but I
like... Yeah, I just feel like it never really gets... I don't know. It's just like a series of scenes. It's like they had all these ideas for shit to happen to them in Europe, and they just do them.
Yeah, nah, it's true. Vegas was good. I just gotta watch it again. It's been a long time. But Christmas, I just watched. I don't know, a couple months ago, and I'm gonna definitely watch it when Christmas season comes in. Mm. That might be a pretty interesting. I might have to give that to Jordan Duncan there. Maybe we'll have to do a rank and file. JR, top 10 Christmas movies.
Isn't that what they did last year? Didn't he do that already?
I don't know. How long has the show been on the air?
Yeah, it was last Christmas.
Yeah, maybe we got to do it then. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to do a little fun. We'll have to think about what our Christmas.
I'm not gonna commit to that, but I'm fairly confident that's what he did.
Yeah, let's commit. We got to commit to something for this year's Christmas spectacular. But of course, we got a couple of holidays before that, JR, and we'll talk about.
I'm gonna check the handy dandy index right here.
The handy dandy index on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Oh, I'm sorry, he did Christmas movie characters. Okay, I knew something Christmas movie related. So,
so Rusty was Rusty from Big
sure
Bang
he
on
was
there.
Number 1, 2, and 3.
Again, yeah. Juliette Lewis, Brian Doyle Murray. It's Bill Murray's brother, who's fucking hilarious. He was the best. He was the greatest boss. But yeah, it's, what was it? Uncle Vito? Is he the one with the toupee, right? Was it Uncle Louie or Uncle Vito?
Uncle Louis.
Uncle Louis. That's it. You couldn't hear a dump truck go through a nitroglycerin plant. That's a good, it's a great movie.
Hey, what is going on here?
We're doing an essay.
Yeah.
Christmas, a stockade. We're talking about movies. But now, speaking of movies, JR, we are in Hollywood this evening.
Oh, yes. City of Sin.
City of Sin for the first time in a couple years. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you No Way Out 2007.
Of Texas. Part 10.
Part 10, yes. Memorable show, JR. We'll get to it once we finish the open, but a memorable show for a couple of reasons.
And it's fitting, by the way, that I'm sick and I sound like horseshit for this episode, because so did our announcer for the show.
Yeah, so did
you. So you may be doing all the everything at the end. I was going to send you my notes and you can just read them at the end.
Send me the play-by-play.
I can't talk anymore.
Exactly. And then Sutton will want to know why he didn't do it. All right. February 18th. Let's just jump in then so we have you saved. 2007. Live from the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. Of course, JR, do you remember the last time we were here?
The WrestleMania 21.
Correct. California's 19th pay-per-view to this point, putting it one behind New York for the most all-time. At this point in 2007, New York had 20. Very memorable here, JR. Of course, your attendance, 14,000. The buy rate, I don't remember it, but it probably was me. And your announcers, as JR mentioned, the voices of the Blue Brand, a voiceless Michael Cole.
Here we are. Vintage.
And, that's right. And John Bradshaw, Layfield.
Doing his best, Brian Pillman.
Yes, he was doing his best, Brian Pillman. Rape and pillage.
33 1/3 throat operations.
That's right. That's our man, Yellow Dog. What is very memorable about this pay-per-view, JR, in the history of pay-per-view?
It is the final, until this year,
a month ago,
brand-specific pay-per-view, because starting after WrestleMania, we go back to co-branded shows.
Yes.
And it's funny, because at the time, it seemed like a good move. I think everyone thought that these shows were not very deep, that they were pretty thin across the board. But when you look back at the roster and the cards they had, I mean, compared to the star power of today, you know what I mean? Like, they still had a shitload of star power, even across both shows. So
I agree.
I get what they were doing, because it made every show seem, like, massive now going forward. But at this point, they still did have enough talent to fill things out. Like, I thought this card stood fine on its own. It's just funny, the perspective of, you know, the 9 years, what it shows you and how they viewed the rosters at the time.
Yeah, I was a little perplexed as well. I mean, maybe the buy rates were a little bit of a struggle, but as we'll see tonight, the card is not that bad. Mm. There are a couple of debuts tonight. I don't get it. I'm a little...
What do you think of the era? Do you think it... Like, of the brand split era. Was it a success? Was it worth doing in the end? Was it stupid?
It was a success for the most part, because it gave a lot of guys an opportunity to shine that otherwise on a one-show roster would not have gotten. Now, is the roster as meaty as it was in 2002? No, it's not. But is there a dearth of talent? I wouldn't say a dearth. I mean, we've talked about throughout this report card, and we're only two shows left to conclude this report card, that there have been some times where it looks like the rosters are thin, but it's not like you're getting four matches. It's not like an in-your-house.
No, and if anything, I feel like they survived their most thin time.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Which was like 04 and 05, like when the rosters were – well, mainly 04. Like, to me, that was when – especially SmackDown was very thin. But I feel like they've actually kind of come through that and restocked. So it's an interesting time. So let's get to our Sutton notes here. Do you remember the theme song on this eve?
I remember seeing it the other day. Something by Monster Magnet. I know it was Monster Magnet. I don't remember the name of the song, though.
It was Monster Magnet, and it was Power Trip by Monster Magnet.
Okay. For some reason, I remember Monster Magnet, but I don't remember the name of the song.
By rate, 218,000. So, yes, not that great.
Not great.
Championship roll call. John Cena, buck 54 days into his reign. Batista, 84 there. Bobby Lashley, 77 days as ECW champion. Jeff Hardy, 97 days as IC champ. Chris Benoit, 131 days as U.S. champion. John Cena and Shawn Michaels are our tag team champions. We'll talk about that later. They are 20 days into their reign. And on the flip side of that, our other tag champions, Brian Kendrick and Paul London, 273 days into their reign. Gregory Helms, cruiserweight champ, 385. So well over a year now for Gregory Helms.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Mickie James, 84 days into her reign. So pretty good run so far of champions. There you go. We are 716 episodes of Raw in the books, 392 of SmackDown, 37 EC dubs, and 448 for Heat. On 227, Scott, we talked about this last month. We'll cover it real quickly here. Test was released, requested his release after serving a 30-day suspension. Out of 77 matches to the promotion, his TV record, 77 matches now, TV record during this run, 13-11-1. Test released a statement on his MySpace page. Just wanted to thank fans for the last year. I love to hear you boo me. I always said I get a kick out of wrestling when it isn't fun. I would get out of wrestling when it isn't fun anymore. And that's what I did. Don't get me wrong. I still love it. I'll always love it. But right now, WWE is not for me. No sour grapes. I had fun up until a month ago when the politics kicked in like they always do. At first, ECW was fun. I can only imagine when it was a real ECW. But when Paul Heyman left, ECW left with him. So basically, he just trashed all the politics and threw them under the bus for burying ECW. We had a death in early 2007 here on February 17th, and this was kind of the opening bell for one of the worst years in wrestling history when it came to people passing away. And of course, I guess Bigelow started things off, right, because he was back in January. So
yes,
yep. This one kind of was one of the first ones that really rang home, though.
Let me guess. Was this Bryan Adams?
No, he's later.
No. Okay. Moolah?
No,
she dies later in the year.
Not one.
You're talking about guys like were affected by the era kind of thing, right? I see what you're saying.
Right. I mean, Moolah was going to die at some point.
Yes.
I mean, this is someone that, you know, it was like, oh, like shit, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, similar deaths kept piling up.
No, I don't remember.
On February 17th, former ECW World Champion, Tag Team Champion, MLW Champion, and WWE Hardcore Champion, Mike Awesome,
at age 42,
was found by a group of his friends after he had hung himself. Of course, due to depression and all, you know, many thought it was due to the concussions and everything. And kind of an early warning sign that not many people paid too much attention to. I mean, they just figured, remember, a lot of people thought he was depressed from not getting a job again, man, not being able to work. And the more you look back and his style of wrestling and the absurd beating and chair shots he took, you know, you really wonder what the state of his brain was at the time when this happened. So kind of a, you know, warning of a dark year ahead when it comes to this kind of thing, which we'll talk about, sadly, in great detail. Here's some vintage news. The biggest surprise out of the latest releases was head trainer Bill DeMott. DeMott ran a high-intensity boot camp-style conditioning program that trainees hated. DeMott was also criticized internally for being overly harsh verbally toward trainees and jumping on them for mistakes. It was so bad that they installed cameras at developmental territory to monitor the sessions. So there you go. Vince McMahon asked Shawn Michaels what he thought about facing John Cena at WrestleMania. The company realized that Shawn Michaels had caught fire after Triple H's injury and needed a high-profile match. The idea of a four-way with Edge and Randy Orton was also discussed. The idea of Batista taking Undertaker was brought up way back in the fall. And at the time, the plan was maybe that the Animal would break that streak. Bam and Bigelow passed with little to no money left. Several Northeast indies, led by wrestling legend Afa, started to raise money for Bigelow's funeral. Vince McMahon also chipped in and ended up paying for it as well. There were two funerals held for Bigelow, one in New Jersey paid by Vince, and one in Florida paid by the money from the local wrestlers. ECW becoming a vehicle to push Bobby Lashley. Vince McMahon is determined to make him as strong as possible. Hulk Hogan said in an interview he received heat over the fact that he was at a UFC event and the crowd constantly chanted Hogan, Hogan during all of the fights, I'm sure. WWE is trying to reach deals with Mexican wrestlers Shocker, Mystico, and Perro Aguayo Jr. The promotion is interested in these wrestlers because they want to build their base. How things change. Same. Among the growing Hispanic community, SmackDown TV audience is heavily Hispanic. Company wanted Mystico back in 2005 for the ill-fated juniors division as their main star. And, of course, we all know how that ended up eventually.
Mm-hmm.
A planned four-way ladder match for No Way Out was scrapped by Vince McMahon as he wanted to put Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, and Eminem back into single competition. John Laurinaitis has been burying RVD matches in more recent agent meetings. This is because RVD said that the guys couldn't leave the arena during the afternoon to go to the gym anymore, and he was upset about it. And this made John unhappy.
Yeah, like he was going to the gym.
This was, I know, right?
Maybe he was meeting somebody at the gym.
Sylvain Grenier had been arrested doing 96 on Interstate 74 the week before, so apparently this had something to do with that. It's talked that Paul Heyman's going to come back as the leader of the ECW Originals. Creative's booking an angle where Heyman cuts a major promo saying he was ousted in December. He was only doing what Vince McMahon had told him to do. Super Crazy's win over Johnny Nitro on the 2-5 Raw is due to the fact that Nitro got heat for being in a relationship with Melina. But mainly it's Melina with the heat due to her reputation. Jillian Hall's airhead singing gimmick is a shot at Brooke Hogan. Vince thinks Jillian looks like Brooke. There you go. Mm-hmm. Racist. In an interview with Financial Week, Michael Selleck, the CFO of WWE, announced that WWE had plans for an expansion that could lead to different international brands having their own independent regional touring schedule, programs, and pay-per-views. Associated Press ran an article questioning whether or not a hair versus hair stipulation versus Donald Trump and Vince McMahon would be an April Fool's joke. Vince is said to be on a mission from God, to fix the ECW brand because he had enough of the lowered ratings, and Donald Trump appeared on Imus in the Morning to promote an upcoming appearance. On 2/12, TNA aired This Is TNA, as Raw was preempted due to the annual Westminster Dog Show, and I didn't know they were still getting preempted during this comeback to USA.
I didn't know that either.
I thought that was part of the deal. Maybe it was part of the next deal they signed? I'm not sure.
Mm. Well, by then, NBC had 1,000 channels. Maybe they didn't.
Right.
I don't know, you know. Was CNBC and MSNBC, were they around in 07? I'm assuming they were.
I don't know if they were like content sharing and everything at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
On 2/16, WWE and TNA went head-to-head for the first time with Raw squashing Impact. Raw with a 3-0 and Impact with a 1.2. So that was, I guess, WWE must have aired something on a Thursday to make up for that Raw. On 2/17, Takeshi Martin, sorry. Morishima became the first international talent to hold the ROH Championship, defeating Homicide. The fifth anniversary tour in our Heat match tonight, or Dark match, I should say, RVD defeated Shelton Benjamin. Falling stars in that one.
Yes. I had a comment. Oh, I know what it was. I heard a secret investor gave money to Bigelow's funeral, and et cetera. Mm. Cookie bar. Just keep that in mind. I am actually on the history of WWE.com, our good friend, Mr. Grand Capthon. I'm looking to see in 2007 if there was a special. What date did you say it was? 217?
216 was the 216.
All right.
Why don't you look that up? I'm going to read through the fun fact. Why don't you tee up our opener?
Yeah, go ahead. Yep, go ahead. All right, our opener, on paper, what looks like a pretty stellar six-man tag to a feud that I thought, and I had even said it at the Royal Rumble, was I thought was over, but as we heard in the fun facts, Vince wanted to give them at least one more shot and maybe start up a singles feud out of this six-man. JR, set us up.
All right. So this match came about, and really not too much build, on 2-2, Joey Mercury interfered in Matt Hardy's match with The Miz, costing Hardy the bout by clocking Hardy in the jaw with his face mask. A week later, Mercury defeated Hardy in a singles match. So there you go. It's also Mercury's final pay-per-view appearance for over 3 years. After this show, M&M split up as a team, with Nitro Molina staying on Raw, Mercury going to SmackDown as a solo star, where he was released on March 26th. After leaving WWE, he returned to the indie circuit, competing for IWA Mid-South, Ring of Honor, and Ohio Valley Wrestling. On October 08, Mercury retired from in-ring competition, citing an accrual of nagging injuries. Aside from his in-ring career, Mercury opened up about his lifelong drug addictions in a December 2007 interview, admitted he had been addicted to alcohol and drugs since age 15, and as a result had overdosed 3 times and wrecked 10 cars. Early in 2006, Mercury entered rehab, but it was all for naught, as he quickly became addicted to painkillers after Armageddon. In March 07, Vince confronted Mercury, released him from his contract, and told him to get his life together. Mercury would credit McMahon for saving his life by giving him a wake-up call. In April 2010, he came out of retirement for another run, and we'll talk about that when we arrive.
I found it, and I'm not surprised that the TNA got crushed. It was on Monday. They taped it.
Okay.
And aired it Thursday. It was from the Rose Garden in Portland. And this is a bunch of stuff happened here. This was the episode Trump comes on. Vince introduces him. They go through the whole thing. There's a whole,
it
you know, other
disaster,
stuff.
Disaster, folks.
I know. Utter disaster. Piper comes back, and he announces that Dusty is the first nominee, or the first, that's what I'm thinking of, inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 07. Like, yeah. I heard he was at Bigelow's funeral, too. Mm. Here's the car. Here are the matches that night, and these are actually pretty good. Johnny Nitro Molina defeated Super Crazy and Mickey James. Kali pinned Eugene. Okay, not all the matches were good. Jeff Hardy pinned Chris Masters. Flair pinned Carlito. And then Carlito shook Flair's hand. Boy, have times changed, huh? And here was the main event. And it's actually a pretty big-time main event. Batista, Taker, Shawn and Cena beat Edge, Orton, MVP, and Kennedy at 16:39 when Michaels pinned Orton with the super kick. After the bout, Taker dropped Michaels with a choke slam, thinking he was responsible for knocking him to the floor before the finish. Then Batista dropping Cena with the sit-down powerbomb, the demon bomb, as the show came to a close. As a matter of fact, this match is on the No Way Out 07 DVD.
There you go.
And it's on the Greatest Superstars of the 21st Century. So if you look at this, you can see why. Mm-hmm. Why Impact got crushed. So they did the show on that Monday and just aired it on that Thursday. So there you go.
All right, big tag feud rolling on. M&M take another crack at the Hardys. MVP and Benoit have a burgeoning feud going on as MVP is trying to take out the veteran to win some gold. MVP's come a long way since the fall. Easily fits into this slot now. Really good blend of guys to open the show. Benoit still trucking, steadying force in the upper mid card. Matt and Mercury open things up and toss some strikes at each other, still pushing the story of Mercury's busted face. Matt gains control and it's an elbow to the neck off the middle rope before tagging Jeff. Matt tags back in, gets trapped in the heel corner and smacked around. MVP comes in and Matt's able to slip free and tags in Benoit, who lights up MVP with chops. MVP goes right back at him, laying in some hard blows to the back. Mercury refuses to tag in, leaving MVP to get beat on some more. Benoit gets a snap suplex for two and tags in Jeff. JBL just rips Teddy Long here for his treatment of MVP over the past couple months. MVP goes back to the eyes and tags in Nitro, who works over Jeff as the crowd tries to rally him on. Jeff ends up outside, and Mercury hops down and slings him into the barricade. Nitro grinds Jeff in the ring, and then M&M and MVP start to tag and double team. Good heel teamwork with distractions and keeping Jeff cornered. Jeff hits a whisper in the wind and makes a tag to Matt, who comes in to clean house. JBL says Matt's been next level since his feud with Helms last summer, which is a good point because he has. Matt grabs a near fall as things break down, but the referee's tied up
MVP comes in and hits Matt with a back suplex. We start up a second heat segment. MVP cranks Matt's neck, followed by more quick tags and control spots. Matt breaks free of an M&M double team and tags in Benoit, who cuts right through MVP and suplexes Mercury onto him before unleashing a double German on MVP and Nitro in a great spot. Mercury comes back in but gets hit with Poetry in Motion, a side effect, a swanton, and a diving headbutt for two. And I thought that was it. But MVP actually breaks up the pin. Really fun sequence there. All the big finishers coming out. Nitro hits a flying clothesline off the apron onto Jeff. MVP grabs the U.S. title, but Benoit dodges him and grabs a crossface. Before MVP can tap out, Nitro breaks it up. M&M loads up Benoit for the snapshot, but Matt breaks that up, allowing Benoit to get the crossface on Mercury. And this is a nasty spot here, too. Just wrenches into his busted-up face under the face mask and forces a submission. Great opener, nonstop action, two strong heat segments, a tremendous final few minutes. I thought all six guys looked strong. Benoit was clearly, again, the ace, the dominant force out there. He was the closer in the match to come finish them off. Hard-hitting and effective. I thought the crowd was locked in, and I thought it was a really strong start. I thought it was kind of a hidden gem of a match. And I think it goes to speak of kind of what we talked about with Claire, right? I think it was Claire last month or last week at the Royal Rumble. How, you know, you always look at Benoit and think he got severely deep pushed after his world title run. But then you look at him and he's always presented as like the strongest. And, you know, a lot of it might be his own doing, the way he works. But
right. He's
always looked at as almost like the strongest guy in a lot of these matches. He's a dominant force. He's the alpha dog in this match. You know, even with star power of the Hardys and Eminem and everything. You know, like, there's a lot going on here, but Benoit still stands out as the top dog. Like, the guy that feels like he came down to hang with these guys. And finishes them off. So even at this point, he's still being presented as a real top player.
Yeah. Step one is something that I had mentioned earlier when I set the matchup for you, and that was I thought this feud was over. I'm glad it wasn't because it was an awesome match, and they just know how to make a great match. I mentioned it in Armageddon, I mentioned it at the Rumble, and I'm mentioning it here. The four of them just know how to work together. So, step two, JBL, I mean, even from the get-go, he was really rankled. He was mouthing off. Even during the open, he was ripping the Spanish guys. And I wonder if he was being told backstage that he actually wasn't acting heel enough, which I couldn't have fathomed that. But, I mean, he was really on tonight from, like, I mean, he was – like channeling inner like Jesse WrestleMania 6 Dusty Sapphire. I mean, he was angry through most of the show. And I thought it added a lot to the match, although he likes all the guys in this match, but you see more examples of it as the show progresses. And step three, again, great fun opener. I would say 3.5. But at this point, anytime I see Benoit throw a flying headbutt, I start getting a little squeamish. and he does one here. I think he does it into like some guy. I don't know who it was. I'm trying to remember. Who did he throw the headbutt on? Who'd you say it was? I don't know if you mentioned it.
It was either Mercury or Nitro.
I think it was Nitro. But he throws it like right into his spine. So, I mean, he actually hit a pretty tough part.
It was Mercury. Mercury took all the finishers.
Yeah, so it was like Mercury. It was like hit right in Mercury's like back. So not a soft area of the body, and it's. I'll just leave it at that. it's getting squeamish, but tremendous opener. The Hardys win. I'm also surprised on a side note that Jeff is still your Intercontinental Champion, but I believe the next night on Raw that changes.
What do you think about MVP's evolution here to the title picture? Was it a natural step? Do you feel like he had kind of put in the work to get to this point? Had he evolved enough? Is he a believable contender? Or is it one of those cases where, you know, Benoit is going to bring him up while challenging for the title? Like, did you see him as a threat, or did you see him just as a, we're going to fill a month until Mania kind of thing?
At the time, probably a fill. Because we weren't quite sure what Mania was going to shape up to be. I would say it was probably a fill.
So you didn't see him as like an actual contender for the belt?
No, not yet.
Was that because of the way you viewed him or the way you thought they were handling him?
The way I viewed him, I think they've handled him fine. But I think as time progresses, it may change. It would change for me. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was just a holdover at the moment. So there you go. Great six-man tag. And the Hardys and Chris Benoit with the victory. Do we go backstage?
Yeah,
Crystal does a crap load of stand-ups in this show.
Yeah, and she does one here with Vicky Guerrero. She says they're close to their goal. And Vicky thanks Crystal for all her help, and they hug, and we'll talk about that in the future. Elsewhere, Finley is berating Little Bastard. Bastard is afraid to go to the ring because they got to face the boogeymen. And Bastard says, little people are scary, of course, referring to little boogeyman. I thought that was funny. Finley hugs him to calm him down and then picks him up and throws him to a giant recycling bin and walks off. Little Bastard freaks out and jumps out as Little Boogeyman was in the bin with him as well. So talk more about this hullabaloo when we get there. But
yep.
There be that.
Okay, our first title match of the evening. There are there's three title matches tonight. I don't want to discredit the ECW title, but two of the big three belts, I should say, are not on the line. Our first one is for the Cruiserweight Championship, as mentioned, your champion, longest reigning champion in the whole company, Mr. Gregory Helms. But JR, as we always do at the beginning of the year, we have a Cruiserweight open because, God forbid, the Cruiserweights can have singles matches. Throw them all in a big match and tell us how we got here.
Well, actually not much build. It's more just a lot of I think it was just a match with guys thrown together. But we do have a lot of farewells and appearances here. On 2-9, Daivari made a surprise return to SmackDown, pinning Gregory Helms in an untitled match. The next week, Scotty Too Hotty challenged Helms, but the match ended in a DQ and a wild brawl, and all these guys came out and fought and set up this match here. Final pay-per-view appearance, Scott, believe it or not, of Scotty Too Hotty. Hang around until May when he was officially released. He would migrate to the indie circuit, remains there kind of working on and off, makes a guest appearance or two with WWE in the future years as well. Are you looking at his record?
I am not.
Okay. 21 pay-per-view matches since, I guess, his nominal push began in 1998 with Too Much. So we're looking around 8 years. God, it feels like even longer, doesn't it?
It does feel like longer. But 21 matches seems like it should be more than that, shouldn't it?
No. I mean, he didn't do like anything for like 2 years.
Well, that's true. That is true. All right, 21 matches.
He had the ball cancer in there too, didn't he?
Was that him?
Yeah, it was definitely him. I think it was while he was there.
21 matches. I'll say 8-13.
Close. 6-15.
Okay.
So, there you go. He's been around quite a while, though, Scotty.
He has. 97, actually, right? Did you say 98? Or
yeah, I guess 97 really? He started the – he was in the lightweight tournament. 98 right. was kind of when he actually started his push with Too Much.
Right.
But, yep. he was around really as far back as, like, whatever, like 93, 94, doing jobs on Raw and stuff. So,
right.
a really long run with the company. Daivari's final duty pay-per-view appearance after the show, he hung around on Raw and SmackDown until October, released from his contract, worked the indie scene until June of 08 when he signed with TNA. 2010, he left TNA and returned to the indies, including a stint in Ring of Honor. Final record for him, 1-2. Also, Scott, I guess this gives away the end of the match, but Gregory Helms' final pay-per-view appearance. In May, it was revealed that Helms had two cracked vertebrae in his neck and needed surgery immediately. Would be out of action until September of 08. Upon his return, he came back with a version of his old gimmick and once again was known as Hurricane Helms. Worked SmackDown and ECW until February of 2010, which is when he was released from his contract. He would hit the indie circuit, but in May of 11 was involved in a major motorcycle accident which sidelined him once again, and now he is a manager slash agent in TNA. Final pay-per-view record at 23 matches, Scott. Any guesses?
I'll say it's a pretty good one because you accrued a lot of them in this stretch. I'll say 13-10.
8-15.
Really? Well, he lost probably a lot during like...
I guess. I mean, I feel like the Hurricane won a bunch. Yeah, that's a weird record.
Yeah, because he won at least, what, 5 pay-per-view matches since last Rumble when he won the belt, I guess, you know? Yeah, weird. He must have had a really shitty record before that.
I think he lost a few early with the Alliance and all that shit going on and everything.
Yeah, so. I guess so.
There you go.
Okay.
Cruiserweight title. So back to the old Cruiserweight Open gimmick, mixing things up. Scotty's still hanging around, like we mentioned. Daivari as well. A fresh matchup. Despite those two guys being stale, it was a matchup felt fresh because of who it was. And they never really crossed paths. Daivari attacks off the bell. goes for a quick covers to play in a psychology of the gimmick. Daivari keeps hammering away, but Scotty fires back, and it's a bulldog and a worm. It eliminates Daivari. So there you go. Big, real big jump for Daivari coming out of the gate. It made him look like shit, too. Like, he laid there for the worm forever and just gets pinned to like nothing, just minutes.
Yeah, it's like the Booker T, it's like the Booker pedigree thing. Just lie there forever.
40 seconds is how long he lasted, and he loses to the fucking worm. Like, it looked awful. Helms is out next. A tough draw for the champ coming in this early. He's aggressive. Joel Scotty as he enters, smothering him with his offense, slingshotting him into the bottom rope throat first for a near fall. And then Helms keeps focusing on the repaired neck and finishes Scotty with a knee to the side of the head. Funaki's out next. Helms eats him up as well. Funaki slips free and tries for a high cross body, but Helms rolls through and hooks the tights for an elimination. Shannon Moore is next with his big punk rock gimmick. Wins the brawl on the floor, but pitches Helms back inside. Helms comes back with a backbreaker for a near fall. Moore lands a few more shots, but Helms comes back with a backbreaker and then takes Moore down off the middle rope with a belly-to-belly and hits a codebreaker for the pin. Jimmy Yang is out next. He goes for right at Helms, getting a two off a standing moonsault. Yang moves very quickly around the ring, buzzing through Helms before hitting a Russian leg sweep into a submission hold. Helms comes hard at Yang, but Yang gets a head scissors takeover into a roll-up for the win, and that ends Helms' historic title reign. JBL's upset as Helms attacks Yang and leaves him laid out. Noble comes out next and batters Yang, cutting him down with a clothesline and neckbreaker for near falls. We get a nice Noble Cobra clutch as JBL's just berating Cole here, going crazy about Helms losing. Young breaks the hole with a jawbreaker, or Yang, I should say, breaks the hole with a jawbreaker. And heats up on offense. Noble hangs in and tries a superplex, but Yang shoves him off and hits a moonsault for the pin. And Yang is crowned new Cruiserweight champion. But I think I'd rather have Donald Trump just, like, sweep the election than Chavo fucking Guerrero come out as the last participant to zero reaction. And I'm not a Hillary person, but you know what I'm saying. Chavo immediately takes control, hits a back suplex before laying in some kicks. Yang cuts him off with a spin kick and dumps Chavo to the floor. Yang heads up top, and it's a big dive onto Chavo on the floor. Back inside, Yang whiffs on a missile drop kick. Chavo hits the Three Amigos, gets booed. Yang catches Chavo up top, and it's a top rope Frankensteiner for two. Yang heads back up again, but Chavo drills him and punches away. Yang elbows Chavo down, but misses a corkscrew moonsault. Chavo hits the frog splash, and yes, wins the Cruiserweight title, blah, blah, blah. I thought it was a pretty fun match top to bottom, and Yang and Helms was really good, as was Yang and Noble. I thought Yang looked really strong, and why couldn't he just win the friggin' title and get a feel-good moment? We've had a 380-day, whatever it is, reign from a heel. Chavo is so played out and stale. We didn't need his infection into this division. Helms' reign was excellent. I thought it elevated him. I thought they should have just done him and Yang in a singles match and let Yang get the win and have a really feel-good moment. Even if you give it to Chavo, like, on SmackDown a couple weeks later. Like, just let Yang have a moment here. And I know you're trying to rebuild, reheat. Chavo's a heel, but God, he fucking sucks. Like, just go away. So Yang gets a nice pop. Chavo wrecks it all, as always. But talk about the match, and then we'll talk about Helms.
Yes. Step one. Only with this title do we have to have multi-person matches. And it's always in the first two pay-per-views of the year. Usually you see this either at the Rumble or at No Way Out. And occasionally you'll see maybe at a No Mercy or something. But it's usually one of the first couple pay-per-views of the year do you see at the Cruiserweight Open, except the one year, of course, we had it at WrestleMania. Step two, I'd love seeing Noble. Didn't he look awesome? Noble looked incredible in this match. One of the best cruisers in the company. I loved the Pitbulls. It's a shame that they didn't stay together and the Cash left. Because I love Jamie Noble. He's one of my favorite guys in this period. Fantastic. And it was nice to see him in the match. But step three, and I'm just gonna hop right on the bandwagon with you. What the fuck? Why didn't Yang should have started the match, went through everybody, and pinned a fresh Helms last, and won the title, and that was that. Eddie's dead. We don't have to kiss Chavo's ass anymore. It's over. Move on. You're a loser. Nobody likes you. You're not your uncle, so go the fuck away. Now, let me ask you this. Not to be a conspirator.
I'd rather his dad be back here winning titles.
Exactly. Better theme music. If he kept that theme, if they kept that, maybe 2% of me wouldn't mind. But, you know, I hate his fucking theme. I hate his stupid tights and his fucking little mustache combo. I hate him.
Let's build that wall if it keeps Chavo out.
Exactly. You just feuded with Benoit for the U.S. title, and it makes you look like a fucking schlub. You just feuded with Benoit for the U.S. title, couldn't win that against a real wrestler, so let's go pick on the guy smaller than me. Because he's not 220. If he's 225, you know, then Trump's hair is real. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. Jimmy Wang Yang has been pushed as like the number one babyface in the division for the last like 6 months. You start him, you have him wrestle all the other guys, have him take a shit kicking from one of the heel guys, have Helms come out last, fresh, like all cocky and everything, have him war for about 5-6 minutes, and have Jimmy Wang Yang get the win.
I mean, I get what they were doing.
I mean,
because I think they were trying to make. They were trying to really heat up Chavo as a heel by you finally end this reign. You know, you get a feel-good moment with Yang, and then Chavo comes out and takes it from everyone. Two problems. They don't really sell it like that,
nope.
And no one cares about Chavo. Like, it's not going to save Chavo. Like, if you debuted a new heel or you know, it was someone just different and fresh, maybe this works, where you steal that moment away. But again, they didn't really sell that on commentary. They didn't put over that. The crowd was ecstatic that Helms finally lost, that Yang was on top after fighting every month going for the title, and that this guy stole it from him. Like, they don't tell that story. So now it just feels like, oh, here's Chavo doing the same old shit.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Do you think it was to keep Vicky happy? Or do they, I mean, they gave her, you know, I don't know what their agreement was between the company and her after Eddie died, but.
I don't think so. What, to make Chavo? I don't think she gives a shit about Chavo.
I don't think she gives a shit about Chavo either. Isn't that sad?
Well, I mean, she's got a role. She's got a job. Like, what does she give a shit if Chavo's cruiserweight champion? I can't imagine that has anything to do with anything.
I mean, the crowd just shits all over it. I mean, just shit. And not. I know you hate the term X-Pac heat, but it's not a shit all over him like, oh, no, dastardly Chavo. It's more like, oh, go the fuck away. It's, you know, it's like.
He infects everything he gets involved in.
Oh, it's disgusting. So, unfortunately, Chavo Guerrero is your new cruiserweight champion when it should have been Jimmy Wang Yang. I did like the byplay for at one point when Cole and JBL were talking about rednecks and hillbillies and stuff. That was pretty funny. So there you go. Chavo Guerrero is your new cruiserweight champion.
I almost like threw up when it came out.
All right. So one of many Crystal interviews, I believe, is next. JR, correct?
No.
Oh, there's a lot of them, though.
Keep rolling those dice.
Damn it. Oh, so we go right to the next match. I see.
yeah.
I'm like, waiting. What's the fucking segment? No.
That's how it works.
All right, next up, another weird fucking gimmicky piece of shit. But I guess you need some levity in the on the card. What is it, JR?
Oh, what is it, JR? It's on 2-2. Finley lost a match with Chris Benoit after Boogeyman appeared from under the ring, grabbing a little bastard along the way. Bastard scooted off, spooked by Boogeyman. The next week, Finley defeated Boogeyman, using a shillelagh for Boogie when he tried to put the worms on Bastard. On 2-16, Boogie got revenge when a mini Boogeyman appeared and distracted Finley, allowing Boogie to win the rematch. This is Boogeyman's final pay-per-view appearance. He'll hang around on SmackDown and ECW until he's released on March 4th, 2009. Another 2 years of the Boogeyman. After his release, Boogie worked the indie circuit, final record 3-1. Another guy that just needs to go away with Chavo. Comedy filler, except that Finley, which I kind of like, the whole thing is obviously just a gag and a joke, but Finley is like taking it all very legitimately and serious. Like he's still fighting for like world titles or something. I thought it was very endearing and totally in character for Finley.
Yes.
Boogie's still hanging around doing his thing, has a midget pal mimicking his whole entrance. Finley and Boogie start off as JBL's just berating Cole here. His voice is getting worse and worse. Boogie lands some punches and then slides out of the ring and yanks Finley to the floor. Boogie runs him into the barricade and pitches him back inside and keeps laying in some basic strikes. Finley walks into a big boot and then Boogie hits a power slam and tags in Little Boogie, who does a pair of sit-out splashes and then eats some worms. Little Bastard hides under the ring apron and then finally gets the guts to come into the ring. Little Bastard disrobes as the crowd actually starts to pop here, but in a great spot. Philly just gets up and kicks Little Boogie in the head. Little Bastard goes back into hiding, but Little Boogie gets a small package on him for two. Finley mows him down with a clothesline and is laying in heavy blows as JBL references King Kong Bundy. Little Boogie gets dumped outside and Little Bastard pulls him out of the ring. Finley goes to check on things, and Boogie crawls out as well. They continue their brawl in the ring. Boogie comes back with a shoulder to the ribs and some shoulder blocks, and the crowd is just completely checked back out on this thing. Boogie keeps pouring it on. Little Boogie returns and climbs up to the top. Boogie launches him off Finley onto Finley, but Little Bastard makes a save and leaves the shillelagh for Finley. Boogie stalks Little Bastard to the floor as Finley cracks Little Boogie with the shillelagh for the win. Much too long, and I thought I completely lost focus. There were a couple funny spots that kept it chugging along, mainly when Finley was beating on Little Boogie Man. I thought the Boogie gimmick, though, overall is very played out. I think Finley just deserves much better. A real comedy time killer that went too long. The only endearing part, like I said, is that Finley is playing this whole thing completely straight.
Mm. Pretty much my three steps are similar to what you said. Step one, at this point, Michael Cole might as well just quit. He might as well just leave the table and get somebody else because, I mean, he's shot. It's like the fifth pay-per-view, I think, in like the last 2 years that Cole's voice goes. It's crazy. Step two, I mean, do we really need this? I guess so. Why can't we just do Boogie versus Finley and let the two little guys run around?
I think I'd rather have some comedy than just Finley Boogie. Like, I've seen enough friggin' singles Boogie matches. I'm all set with those.
Yeah, that's true. That's
at least
true,
this you get. I mean, like, Finley beating on the midget is the most entertaining part of this. I'd rather have
tremendous.
Finley versus Little Boogie than anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
Finley just chucking him around and kicking him in the head was the highlight of everything.
Well, that leads me to step three, which is I did love JBL's WrestleMania 3 reference to Bundy squashing Little Beaver because I really wanted Finley to squash. it's like Fat Boogie. Oh, he's like little. I mean, he's a little misshapen. So there you go. Finley and I mean, they say Little Bastard, but in that backstage skit that you referenced earlier, he does call him Hornswoggle.
He calls him like a Hornswoggle.
He calls him you little Hornswoggle.
Yeah.
So they must just adopt. I still call him Bastard, but they must adopt.
I think it was starting to come in.
Yeah.
Because they call him Bastard all throughout the commentary.
Yeah. So I'm sure they adopt Hornswoggle on SmackDown, you know.
Well,
that's
Glenn Butler, the master of Little Bastard's history.
That's right. Yes.
What's the future for Finley here? Like, where do you see him? I mean, he's kind of not really a world title contender anymore. Back in the U.S. division, is he kind of a gatekeeper? Does he a guy that's going to have feuds or just kind of fight? Like, what do you see his role being here in 07? Like, 06, it was kind of a hybrid of working his way back into things, having matches with other old veterans, and getting all of a sudden suddenly into the main event picture. Also, U.S. title run. Like, do they keep him at that level that he was in 06, or does he just kind of settle into, you know, and I'm not using this to prod you, but like a Jim Duggan 90 kind of role, just like mid-card veteran, tough guy, can fight anyone, you know, kind of has feuds, but not. Like, where do you see him being more going forward here?
He's definitely a gatekeeper. I mean, he's not
or
a guy that...
How would you have used him? I'll put it that way, too.
I like him as a gatekeeper. I don't think he was ever meant to be anything else when they used him on camera when he made his debut. I think he was there to kind of galvanize the mid-card, kind of keep him in line and kind of tighten things up for a while. And then when things are good, he could, you know, mosey off. But he's actually gotten over as a pretty good heel. And you could start to see the tweener side of Finley at this point. But, I mean, the U.S. title's fine. I mean, I don't think he would ever gotten title shots or anything. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe you could have had him and Batista at Armageddon if you didn't want to do that tag. That would have been interesting. I don't know where you would have put Booker, but I mean, because I think you needed Batista and Kennedy at the Rumble. Yeah, I mean, I like him in that gatekeeper role. Maybe, you know, still the U.S. side. Perhaps if, you know, if they need help on the other brand, they could, you know, push him over to Raw. But really, there was no need for him on Raw. Yeah, I like the gatekeeper thing because it galvanizes the mid-card. You really don't need to give him any belts. And I think that was the whole plan when he came. When he, you know, left behind the scenes and got on camera in 06 was to kind of tighten the mid-card up, give a guy for Booker when he was champion, something like that. So I think that's the key there. I think that's what his role was, and that's what I would keep him as. You know, put him in Money in the Banks and multi-guy matches and stuff like that. It's, it fills out roster spots. And I had the thought in my head. And set guys up for other feuds, things like that. So kind of like Ev here. And fill up
some
comedy gaps. You know, you don't have to go crazy.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good spot for him is that guy that can be moved up for a TV title match, you know, against the world champ if you need to, kind of tag match. You need a guy to fill in on the heel side. He's got credibility up and down the board. So, by the way, things I would rather watch than a Chavo Guerrero match here at this point. A Medea Christmas on USA coming this weekend.
God.
I'd rather even watch that. And even though it stars fucking Larry the Cable Guy, I would prefer any Medea movie over Shallow Girl.
I can't stand it. Yeah, I agree. Ugh, terrible.
They just churn these fucking things out. There's a Halloween one coming out, too.
I thought there was already a Halloween one.
Is there? I don't know.
Let's see. There's what? Two weddings ones. There's a Christmas one. Isn't she moving or something?
Do you know her actual first name? Medea is her nickname.
No.
Think Candy Girl.
So her actual first name is Mabel.
Here's all the Medea movies. A Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Medea's Family Reunion. Meet the Browns. Medea Goes to Jail. I Could Do Bad All by Myself. Medea's Big Happy Family. Medea's Witness Protection. A Medea Christmas. And Boo, A Medea Halloween. That's coming out this year. There's also an animated film, Medea's Tough Love. And some plays she was in as well. It's another epidemic. And USA loves them. USA is in bed with Tyler Perry and Medea.
Dreadful.
Amadea.
Amadea, Amadea, Amadea. Big Mabel Murphy was her mom. So there you go. So there's two Mabels. Mabel the mom and Mabel the daughter.
Jesus.
We
need Mo.
Actually, I was watching a mom match today. Do you remember the April 11th, 90? Well, yeah, you do, probably. The
well,
April
yeah,
11th.
I mean, I can't just tell you what it was.
Well, it was the April 11th, 94 Raw when they were doing the phone poll to who would face the Quebecers, and it was between the Bushwhackers' mom and the Guns, and the mom actually won. It was actually a pretty good match. I thought it was better than their 10 match, to be honest with you.
It'd be hard not to be.
Well, that's true. So, Finley and Bastard win. Let's move on.
A very Medea tag team title match.
Mabel and Mabel. And I'm bringing the Mabels. Have you ever had a non-Flair Triple H back-to-back audio bite match?
No, I'm sure at some point these guys are involved in something. This issue, Scott, kicked off at the Royal Rumble when Kane eliminated Booker. Booker returned to toss Kane out as well. On 2-2, Booker received a key to the city of Houston. Went on to cut a promo how he's the greatest man to ever come out of Houston. Started picking a fight with Billy Gibbons, who was at ringside. But before things escalated, Kane made the save. 2 weeks later, Booker turned back the clock and did a movie review of Kane's future, See No Evil. After some mocking, the lights in the room turned red, and Kane appeared, scaring Booker and Charmel away. There you go. Again, feud started at the Rumble. Time filler feud for both guys. Aimless in the new year. Booker's still great with his gimmick, but kind of feels like a lost soul now. You know, just kind of floating around. Doesn't have that same glimmer and gleam in his eye. But still putting it all into the gimmick. Booker tries to dodge Kane to start, but Kane catches him and starts tossing punches and elbows in the corner. Kane continues to work Booker over with strikes before grabbing a neck vise. Booker goes to the eyes and punches away, but Kane cuts him off with a backbreaker. Kane hammers away some more and knocks Booker to the floor. Kane follows out. Booker kicks him and rams him to the steel steps. Back inside, Booker hits a missile dropkick for two. Booker grabs a hammerlock, but Kane eventually forces his way out of it and lays in a clothesline and punches. Kane tries for a flying clothesline, but Booker kicks him in the jaw on the way down. Both men start to trade blows until Booker is able to ground Kane and club away at him. Booker maintains control until Kane blocks a suplex and hits one of his own. More back and forth here until Booker hits a kick to the gut but misses a scissors kick, leading to a big Kane clothesline. Kane clobbers Booker in the corner, followed by a pair of clotheslines and a sidewalk slam. Kane hits a top rope clothesline, but Charmel gets on the apron, allowing Booker to hit a sidekick. Kane shrugs it off and hits a chokeslam for the win. And Scott, I thought this was better than I remembered it to be. It was a fine veteran paint-by-numbers match. It was boring at times, but I thought both guys got into it at the end and upped the ante a bit. Booker worked hard with his offense, took some nice bumps. I thought both guys could have mailed it in here and just kind of went through the motions, but I thought they both worked hard. I think I give them some credit. They stepped up when they absolutely did not really need to. They could have just did a standard match. But at the end, they kind of felt like they were saying, all right, hit the gas a bit. And Booker was unloading some of his older offense and kind of looking like he was feeling it a bit. And I like this match, believe it or not. It's much, much, much more than I expected to. I was prepared to really be bored to death by it, and it surprised me.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of this because I'm trying to remember if they had feuded before, but I'm not sure. Step one, Booker settling back into the mid-card role, and I'm okay with it. Booker's one of those guys who...
lost soul.
Yeah, he could go anywhere, though.
I do wonder. You know? I feel like as great as he was with this whole thing in 06, I kind of feel like he needs a break. Like, what more? What do we need to see him do now? Like a feud with Kane? You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to win the world title again. Like, that's done. He had his run. There's other guys in the mid-card. We're not going to really see him in the IC or US title picture. And he's kind of like a Finley, but more played out. Like, Finley's kind of new still for us. Mm-hmm. You know, Booker's been doing this for, you know, five and a half years or whatever now in the WWF.
So you think he was due for a vacation?
I think so. I mean, and he was nonstop in WCW for how long? 93 to 01? You know what I mean? Like, he has gone hard for 14 years in our consciousness. Or longer, 16 years in our consciousness, right? No, 14?
Yeah.
14. 93 to 07. 14 years here doing his thing. I just felt like it was kind of time for him to maybe just go away for a bit. Like, he had a great run, better than anyone could have ever thought he'd have again. But now it's kind of like he's exhausted his rematches. And he's just card filler. I mean, I guess SmackDown needs guys like him, but it feels like for his own sake, he could use a little break and then come back.
Yeah, and no problem with that. I agree with that, too. He's different than Finley. Finley's already had a good career. He's a little older, whereas Booker could be used again if he's off camera for a while.
And Finley's also newer to us. Like, him in that role doesn't feel as old and played out because we haven't seen him fight everyone he could fight. Like, he could go to Raw and have a whole new slew of opponents. Like, we haven't seen that yet. So there's more to see with Finley. Booker, we've kind of seen everything he has. Like, you know, we've seen him feud with John Cena, seen him feud with Batista, he's feuded with Edge, he's feuded with Kane, he's feuded with The Undertaker. You know, like, think of all the guys he's fought and feuded with. Like, who's here? You know, like a Kennedy, maybe? I don't know. He's feuded with Booker. You know, like, he's fought everyone pretty much that's at the top of the card. I mean, I guess one guy, a guy he hasn't really feuded with is the Hardys. Like, maybe that could have been something fresh. Maybe a feud with him and Matt Hardy or something like that.
I mean, would moving to Raw have helped?
No, I mean, there's no one over there either.
Who's Sean.
Yeah,
never done
Sean
with Sean, but I still agree that I think maybe some time off would have helped him.
I kind of wish we got Matt and Booker. I think that could have been a good feud to elevate Matt up to get him back as a single. Like, let Booker put him over on his way back down the ladder.
Yeah, maybe put him in the Money in the Bank so, you know, Booker can get a Mania payday and have a quick feud and then take some time off, which he kind of does anyway. But we'll get to that. Step two, a decent power match. The crowd did seem pretty dead, though. I feel like the crowd was kind of slightly cooked. And I know we always have our usual, you know, prejudices about California crowds. But they were good at WrestleMania 21, but, they were a little, you know, there's been a couple of moments in this early card where they've been a little flat, and they were flat in this match. Now, getting back to what we were just talking about, Booker, my step three is, if you wanted to have this feud continue, why don't you have Booker win? But if not, if this is a one-shot just to fill a spot on the card.
Yeah, that's all it is. I mean, Kane winning here is perfectly fine. It's two guys, that doesn't matter. And Booker was protected enough last year. Lost to Kane's not going to kill him. So I think let them go out there and do their thing and give the face a win to make the crowd happy, if they care.
Yeah, exactly. So Kane wins in, you know, average, decent power match. All right, why don't we take a break? We've got three matches left. What do you think so far? Down the middle, 50?
You know, we've talked about cards like this over the last year or so. It's a perfectly good undercard that'll be made or broken by its top matches. So, like, right now, nothing has been done to hurt the card. And there's nothing that stands out as, like, even if the main event sucks, it's still a great card. You know what I mean? Like, it's perfectly, it did everything it needed to do. I thought the opener was really damn good. The Cruiserweight open was pretty good. The Finley shit was blah, but short. And Kane Booker was surprisingly feisty. So we're like in a decent spot with three matches to go.
Right.
And we'll see if the big ones can, or even, there's really big one on this card, but we'll see how the back end carries things. But so far, so good. Better than I remembered. Mm. I feel like we say that every No Way Out. They're always like better than
I know. Again, we got three matches left, two title matches, including a debut. But first, let's take a break. Because we at Place to Be Nation going to pay the bills. Because?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcasts. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzuto here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's Past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners, as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Who the hell is CRZ? It's me, Christopher Robin Zerman. This is the Place to Be Nation podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at No Way Out 2007. I want to take a moment, though, discuss some of the changes over at PlayStation.com, specifically around the podcast feed. So, course, Scott, as Brad Woodling wonderfully puts it at PlayStation.com, we're incredibly proud of the talent we have as a family at podcast at PlayStation.com. I want to thank you for listening, subscribing, rating, and sharing, of course. You can find our feeds on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Podbean, SoundCloud, and, of course, right at PlayStation.com. And, Scott, we have some changes going on. It's really just a rebranding of our feeds to kind of make them more searchable, to make them make more sense, to align things a little bit better. And I want to make sure that everyone knows, if you're already subscribed to our feeds, this changes nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's a lot of nerves going out, a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of confusion when there shouldn't be, because it's all very, very simple. No degrees needed. This is very straightforward. We have three feeds. So if you're new to our show, or you were unaware of these feeds, here's where you go to look to subscribe to them. If you have already subscribed, you do nothing. When you refresh, you'll probably see the new name, maybe an updated logo, but that's all. The Place to Be podcast feed, Scott, placetobe.podbean.com, that we've had since 2011. still exists, still houses all of these great shows. It is now dubbed Place to Be Nation Wrestling. So, you know, that's us, Main Event, Clotheslines and Headlines, you know, the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the archives of the Dangerous Alliance, like all those shows, our old sports shows. Those are all the reaction show every month, Rewind with Ben Morse. All of those will still be housed there. That is the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, formerly the Place to Be Podcast feed. We also have Place to Be Nation Pop, which started last year. That houses all of our comics, our gaming, entertainment, and going forward, we'll house our sports as well. So if you're a fan of the NBA team podcast with Andrew Reach and Adam Murray, that will be at PTBN Pop. So PTBN Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Wrestling, is the wrestling shows that have kind of grown with that feed. Sports, TV, games, movies, comics will all be at Place to Be Nation Pop. Third feed, Pro Wrestling Only. Formerly PWO-PTBN is now just the Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed, and that is on iTunes as well, SoundCloud, and Google Play. So that is where the big boys play, Titans of Wrestling, Letters from Kayfabe, Tag Team's back again. So yeah, all those shows that you know and love on the old PWO-PTBN feed will now be just called Pro Wrestling Only. So again, if you already subscribe in iTunes or any of the other feed catchers, you don't need to do anything else. It's just, this is going forward. We felt that it would really help us with kind of branding, with searching, and I think it just makes things look neater and more aligned. So Place to Be Nation Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only, the only three feeds you need to know, unless you're also interested in the full Kevin Kelly Show archives. They have their own feed on iTunes as well, but you can get the whole show at Place to Be Nation Wrestling too. So that's it, placetonation.com. Follow us on social media, Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon is your direct link for all of your Amazon shopping to help support Place to Be Nation in the holiday season. And of course, if you're looking for other gifts, our P2B publications, if you click the banner on the right-hand side, Scott, all of our free ebooks, we've reviewed all pay-per-views of WWF from 1985 through 1996, WrestleMania 12, halfway through or early into 96. We've done all the Saturday Night's Main Events, and we're almost done through the first year of Raw. You can read those on PlaceToBeNation.com, and eventually will be in ebook form as well. So there you go.
There you go. You're home for everything pop culture. All right, let's go back to L.A. Speaking of pop culture, our second title match of the evening, JR, is next. And that is for the WWE Tag Team Championships, a.k.a. the Blue Belts, currently held still by the exemplary team of Mr. London and Mr. Kendrick, who have held it since last year's Judgment Day. Judgment Day. And they're facing, once again, this is what, the third time they're facing a, like a brand new debut team. First it was the Pitbulls. Then it was Stevens and
Casey James.
Yes. Did they have a new team name? They didn't, right?
The team just Stevens affectionately, if I remember.
Yeah. That's right. They had, you know, it was like a one match and done. And now another team coming on the scene.
The open's the best. Try to think of the glass breaking, you know what I mean? Like the great iconic first riff of the theme song.
Well, it's like chronic.
It's like the old fucking Twix commercial. Bout.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, Deuce and Domino, like a douche in the middle of the night, arriving here in the tag team scene. Deuce and Domino, along with their valet Cherry, are the newest tag team on SmackDown. James Rear Jr. portrayed Deuce. The name may sound familiar to you, Scott, because he's the son of legendary murderer Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Snuka Rear entered the family business in the late 90s, competing in UWA and XWF. Worked the circuit before being signed by WWE and assigned to OVW in 2005, taking on the name Deuce Shade. What does that rank on your all-time list of gimmick names, Scott?
Deuce Shade! Sounds like a guy in WCF. Deuce Shade! Let me tell you something,
no,
the MVP...
I don't think WCF would even stoop to Deuce Shade.
It's like you said Deuce Shade! I think Jordan does a well podcast with that name. Oh, God. Samuel the Giant, you're going to take out Deuce Shade.
Oh, God, what an awful name. Deuce Shade. Stupid. He would compete as a single star until January of 06 when he teamed up with Dice Domino and dubbed the Throwbacks. Cliff Compton signed with Dirty in late 2005, assigned to OVW, took up the name of Dice Domino as a single star. He had moderate success, but things took off when he teamed with Deuce, dropping the shades, and they adopted the 1950s greaser gimmick. Third member of the group was Cherry, portrayed by Kara Drew. Drew, a lifelong fan that took the plunge chasing her dream, starting in the late 90s, worked the indie circuit as Miss Kara and Kara Slice before she joined OVW in late 05 as Cherry Pie to continue her training. In January, Dirty gave her a developmental deal, and she would hook up with the Throwbacks as a valet. It was revealed that Cherry was Domino's sister and Deuce Shade's girlfriend. In mid-06, they revamped the gimmick, shortened their names, and became known as the Untouchables, Deuce, Domino, and Cherry. They'd win the OVW tag team titles three times before being called up to SmackDown in January of 07, undergoing yet another name change, now just known as Deuce and Domino.
Deuce and Domino.
Sounds like a Casey Kasem, like yeah. The whole write-up. And then it was revealed that Cherry was Deuce's sister. And this one goes out to Deuce and Domino.
When you said he dropped the shade and then he dropped the deuce.
Right? He should have dropped the deuce all over this fucking name. Oh, God. On 119, Deuce, Domino, and Cherry made their SmackDown debut, riding to the ring in a classic car, defeating two jobbers in the first match. On February 2nd, though, they made some waves, defeating the tag team champions Kendrick and London in a non-title match. Repeated that win the next week, again defeating the champs. Later that night, it was revealed that London and Kendrick would defend their titles in another rematch of their Armageddon Ladder War. On 216, though, Deuce pinned Kendrick in a singles match. It was announced that Deuce and Domino would instead get a tag title shot at No Way Out, and they never mentioned that ladder match again. So, remember, back to our Sutton notes from earlier,
mm-hmm.
when yep. They mentioned that they were debating that, and... There you go.
Yeah, precisely.
Buddy. So, London Kendrick, still reigning, chugging along. Great run, filled with fun matches. Great booking to let him dominate things. Deuce and Domino, interesting, unique gimmick, brought up intact from developmental. Kind of starting to happen a little bit more and more, Scott, now, as you look at these acts coming up over the last couple of years. Eminem was one, now Deuce and Domino. James and Idol, or Steven. So, they're kind of bringing them up after honing the gimmicks down there. Feels a bit rushed that they're in the title picture. Illustrates the lack of depth and focus on the tag division here. Deuce and Domino, at the very least, went all in on the gimmick. It stood out. It was very different with Cherry at ringside and the car and the music. At least they're buying in. They're really going all whole hog, as the kids say, on the gimmick. So, of course, the crowd doesn't give a shit, though. They're completely dead as they drive out. Domino London open things up as London uses his speed to stick and move, and then quickly tags Kendrick. Kendrick does the same, buzzing around the ring, starting to work the arm. London and Kendrick tag in and out, keeping the challenges off balance. Deuce drops a shade and finally gains his bearings and takes out London, grounding him with a double chicken wing. Domino's lip is busted open, leading to a pretty cool visual where he's got blood all over his white T-shirt. Challengers beat on London using their power, but also get a little bit cocky and sloppy at times. Domino hits a nice butterfly suplex for two. As the challengers continue to dominate London, the crowd is just really quiet during the heat segment here. They rally London a bit while he's trapped in a rear chin lock. London dodges a backdrop and makes the tag. Kendrick comes in and beats on the Deuce. The Deucer getting a near fall on a backside. The Deuce cuts him off, and the challengers go for a doomsday device, but Kendrick rolls forward and steals the win with a victory roll on Deuce. A perfectly fine match, but the crowd just was not into it, and it never kicked into the next gear. I was surprised London and Kendrick won. I just assumed Deuce and Domino would pick up those wins and then win the titles here. But instead, the reign continues. It's been a great reign, but they need depth badly. And we talked about how Raw's focusing on the tag division. SmackDown doesn't seem to be doing much, because in an ideal world, Deuce and Domino would have spent between now and April picking up wins and building momentum, and then being a post-WrestleMania challenge instead of coming up and within 2 weeks already being in the championship title picture. It makes the tag belt and the division seem so watered down.
Yeah, and what's funny is you say that, because Raw, the last two tag team champions, and we'll mention the new ones in a moment, are two singles guys put together. At least on SmackDown, you actually have tag teams, but the problem is they don't stick around.
Right.
That's what's killed London and Kendrick is...
Right, why can't Deuce and Domino fought... Right, Steven and James, or whoever, Bartles and James, and whoever else. just kept moving their way up the ladder. No, you're right.
Deuce and Shade. Right. Whatever happened to Regal and Taylor?
Whatever happened to Predictability?
I mean, the milkman, the paper boy. Jesus, even the evening TV. Step one. That's like chronic. Step one, cherry. I'll just leave it at that. Ugh, I love cherry. It was nice to have a kind of an Elizabeth type valet where she, you know, her boyfriend and brother are both deuces, and she's like, you know, waving to the crowd. She doesn't cheat or anything. She's just really, you know, smoking hot with the roller skates on. So no, I love Cherry. She was a good addition to the female side of the roster. Step two, I agree with you. I was sure London and Kendrick were losing here. The same night Helms' long title run ended, you would have thought London and Kendrick's long title run would have ended. So I was. In all these years, you didn't know if it was Deuce or Douche. It doesn't really matter.
Right. Both.
Or both.
I feel like this is if they evolved the gimmick into like the 70s, this would have been their theme. You know what I mean? Like they go from the doo-wop to this fucking acid psychedelic song.
Do-do-do-do-do. Wrapped up like a... Come out, you know, Manfred and Man. But yeah, I easily thought they were losing here. Again, the same night that Helms' 300-and-something day run ended, you'd have thought their 280-something day run would have ended. So I was surprised, like you, that I thought Deuce and Domino were winning this one. And step three, Cole and JBL, and we... Chronic. Which is what you're taking or smoking while listening to that song. And we've mentioned this multiple times since they flip-flopped. You know, since they switched, you know, commentators and throughout their shows, Cole and JBL definitely have a different chemistry than Cole and Taz did. Taz broke Cole's balls, but he didn't really like, you know, motherfuck him like JBL is. I mean, he's trashing the shit out of him big time. It's a different chemistry, and at times it's cool, at times it seems forced, but I think it's fine. I think it's really good. I think they do have good chemistry. It's just a different chemistry. Taz is a little more comedic. JBL's not. JBL's more like
angry.
Jesse.
Yeah, he's pissed off at everything.
Yeah, JBL's like Jesse. Yeah. So
now, even Jesse wasn't this consistently pissed off. You know what I mean? Like JBL's is angry constantly. Like everything he says is filled with anger, which
That's
makes
true.
Later in the night kind of interesting when he's all of a sudden gonna be the straight guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Jesse only really hated like three guys. The rest of them, he just did his normal heel shtick. But if it was like Hogan, fucking Dusty, or you know, it's Warrior, or somebody, then the vitriol would come out. So,
Do you think Deuce and Domino had any staying power? Or did you think this was another one and done gimmick? Like, what did you think of the gimmick in general? Like, I kind of liked it at the time because I'm like, it's different. It stands out. It's, you know, the idea is that they're kind of delusional and they think they're still in the 50s. Like that's what I liked about it. They weren't like given this gimmick of trying to get over guys that want to be in the 50s. Like they acted literally like they were in the fucking 50s. So they were kind of made to be like delusional clowns in a way, but tough guys, like straight out of the Outsiders or whatever. You know what I mean? So like, it was kind of, I don't know. I kind of dug it in that they made it as earnest and sincere as possible. Like these guys literally think it's 1953 and this is how they're going to act.
It's funny. I had that thought of the Outsiders in my head. That's funny you made that point because I was thinking the same thing.
Just stab a guy in the water fountain. They really
That's right. Him. Yeah. Poor Leaf. Well, these guys were greasers. They weren't socias. But they were a gimmicky team. I thought they had staying power. I just didn't think they deserved a title shot this soon. They should have done like your theory of kind of letting them go, maybe have them maybe in a multi-team match at Mania and then have them earn a shot at Backlash, something like that. I wasn't expecting a super, you know, quick title match here. I thought they had staying power. I thought that was a funny gimmick. Again, Cherry, easy on the eyes. Usually that doesn't hurt and keeps, you know, fans engaged. So I was cool with it. I thought it was a funny gimmick. I didn't think that's why I thought they were going to win. If they were like Idol and Stevens or whatever, I would have thought, you know, who knows. But that's a problem with these with the tag division on SmackDown right now. It's all one and done. It's one shots, and then they vanish. Seriously, where's Regal and Taylor?
And then they I would have thought they would have gone and flew up into the sun. Like
that's right, exactly. Case. That's right. Deuce Zuko and Danny Kinnicky, or you know, Domino Kinnicky or whatever. A hickey from Deuce Shades like a Hallmark card. All right, so London and Kendrick retain their I'm gonna have that in my head now. Retain.
Pull down like a douche shade in the middle of the night.
Pull down the douche. That's only what you said. Pull down the douche shade.
That's exactly what I said.
The sun's shining bright, so pull down the douche shade.
It's the middle, like it's the middle of the night.
Dropping
left and right.
Right. Pull down the big douche shade. No sun is shining bright. Wow, that's pretty good.
Tonight.
I think maybe Jordan Duncan's going to go as Manfred Man. Who knows? All right.
Stupid name.
So London and Kendrick retain their WWE Tag Team Championships in a moderately decent match against Bruce Stark, with Domino bleeding everywhere. Of course, as you know, Domino. Mr. Cliff Compton. All right. Next.
PTBN alum.
Yeah. Backstage.
Domino. This is on the Stephen Carino show, I believe. I don't know. Yes. We better go backstage. If I don't know it, it's not worth it. So,
yeah, it's not worth it. Crystal just interviewed let's put it this way. I think Crystal interviewed like every member of the main event tag match. That's pretty much what she did. All right. Next, JR, our final title match of the evening, the ECW Championship on the line. Your champion, as mentioned, Mr. Bobby Lashley. As a matter of fact, before this match, they did like a, you know, like a montage thing of, you know, how nice he is and goes talks to kids and, you know, goes back and sees his army buddies and that kind of thing.
They should have done it like the Hogan one with Earthquake, where they show him doing all the nice stuff, and then all of a sudden he gets the shit kicked out of him and it switches to this.
Be down by the deuce in the shade of the night. So they do like a whole montage about, you know, how good things, and kind of reminds me of like when Benoit won at 20 and they did the whole thing where he goes back to his school and that kind of crap. And it seems similar to kind of what this is. All right. So Mr. Lashley defending his ECW championship here against JR, a guy who's getting title shots left and right, huh?
Yeah, Mr. Kennedy on 216 challenged Lashley to this match, and Lashley accepted. So there you go. Simple. Easy peasy lemon squeezy, as the real young kids say. Kennedy's big push rolls on. He gets another title shot. At some point, he gets counterproductive, though, Scott, if he doesn't cash in on one of them. That's my thought. Big character package for Lashley, like you said, before the bout, was it could elevate his profile. And a lot of this, you know, filters into what the Sutton note said earlier with Vince, how he viewed things with Lashley. ECW title gets farmed out again to another non-ECW show. Gets a non-ECW contender, so already watering that down further. Kennedy runs his mouth during the interview, and Lashley shows up backstage and slugs him. Kennedy attacks Lashley during his entrance, and that triggers a brawl in the aisle. JBL bitches about the mistreatment of Kennedy by Teddy Long. The match finally starts as Lashley clubs away Kennedy, and Kennedy keeps trying to escape. Kennedy finally pushes free and goes outside, but Lashley follows him out. Kennedy lands a few shots in, but Lashley cuts him off, slugs him, and pitches him back in the ring. Lashley uses his power offense, mixing in clotheslines and clubbing blows and slams to rattle the challenger. Kennedy kicks his way back into the match, but Lashley recovered and went for a torture rack until Kennedy went to the eyes to bust it up. Kennedy went back kicking away at Lashley and then grabbing an inverted figure four. The crowd's been flat for a while at this point, despite, I thought, a card full of good matches. Kennedy switches to a leg lace and hammers away at the knee and then transitions to a single crab until Lashley gets the ropes. Lashley just does whatever he can to gain some kind of separation from Kennedy, but Kennedy's just all over his legs, smothering the champ, getting near falls. Kennedy hits a DDT for two as Lashley tries to scratch and claw away, but he can't get free. Cole's voice is nearly gone now as JBL is really starting to carry the load of commentary. The crowd gets restless as Kennedy hooks another half crab. Kennedy finally goes for a big blow, but Lashley gets up on his knees and gets his knees up on a Kenton bomb. Lashley staggers to his feet, hits a T-bone as the crowd is turned on him and the match. Lashley gets a torture rack and drops into a backbreaker for two. Kennedy catches Lashley with a swinging neckbreaker for two. Ref gets bumped, allowing Kennedy to go low, and then roll out of the ring to grab a chair. Back inside, Kennedy smashes Lashley with a chair while the referee's awkwardly trying not to see it. It was such an awful spot. Mickey Henson is like staring at him, and he quickly turns his head so he won't see it. It's really, really bad. Lashley grabs a chair and whiffs and then barely connects again to draw a really lame DQ. Lashley beats on Kennedy in the aisle with a chair I thought it was another really good match, and it fell apart at the end completely. Kennedy's leg-based offense and attack was well-executed. It was focused. He's been ferocious. Lashley was doing anything he could to scratch free, but Kennedy just, anytime Lashley found like an opening, Kennedy would just punch away the leg and put him back down. I thought this crowd has been absolute dog shit. I think he's derailed things late during the comeback. Again, the finish was terrible, and Kennedy's been done no favors because he shouldn't have even been in this spot. But Lashley has good selling. His comeback was tepid and awkward, and he stopped selling the leg. But again, a good match. It could have been really good if they had a smarter finish and the crowd bought in. I've been really impressed with Kennedy in these two world title matches that he's had at the Rumble in here.
I have too, and I'm going to say that in my first step. I like that he's gotten these two world title matches to boost the resume, and the reason is he's had back-to-back title matches with two guys clearly bigger than him, no doubt. I mean, first Batista at the Rumble and now Lashley here, so he's had to find a way to chop the trees down. And he's done that. And again, Lashley, in his inexperience, didn't sell it because I don't think he forgot. Because, you know, what are you going to do? Step two, it's unfortunate that this match didn't go as well towards the end like it should have. Because I really think Lashley needed to shake off the funk from that test shit show at the Rumble. That match was just abysmal. And this needed to be better. And it was mostly because Kennedy... But it needed to be better, and it was a little bit, but Lashley really has now struggled back-to-back title matches. The Rumble, you'll give him a pass because Test was just a misshapen, you know, freak show. But here, he needed to look a little better. And the fact that he forgets the leg thing is just is inexcusable when you're a champion. I don't care what level of champion you are. You gotta play the psychology. You know, you don't get to be on one of the two main rosters, or three, I guess, or two and a half, depending on your point of view, and not learn psychology like selling a leg. I mean, come on. We've seen that so many times, JR, in the last couple of years, where psychology gets thrown right out the window. And you see, you know, a guy getting his leg beat down for, you know, 7-8 minutes, and then all of a sudden he's hopping around like nothing was wrong. It's just, it's ludicrous. And we saw it at the Rumble. We brought it up way back at Rumble 03 with Triple H and Steiner. Steiner, I think, sells a leg injury, or he's going after Triple H's leg, and the Triple H doesn't do it anymore. That's just a big mess. And this match is the same way. And step three, do you paint yourself in a corner here, JR? He jobs to Batista clean. I think that match should have ended in a DQ. Kennedy couldn't afford another loss, but does this hurt Lashley that he couldn't beat him clean? Like, do you think they painted themselves into a corner here on how this match should have ended?
Yeah, because we already got the clean loss, like we said, and which we were fine with back at the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
But no need to have him be in this spot again. If you're not going to have him win the title, and then you get stuck with this real shit finish. Like, if you want Lashley to get built up strong, you're not doing him any favors. You fucked him at the Rumble with Test, and you're doing it again here. Like, when is he going to pin someone? You know, like, every time we see him on pay-per-view, he does like nothing, literally does nothing. So why not have Lashley just mow through someone here, get the win back on Test? Well, I guess he was suspended, but fine. There's going to be someone, Tommy Dreamer, anyone. You know what I mean? Like, let him mow through someone and give Kennedy a nice win somewhere on this card. Like, he needs a good bounce back win. I think he's looked really good. He's been impressive. Like, I could see why now. And by the way, why not feed Finley to Lashley?
That's a good one.
Or
keeps
Chavo
up the feud.
You want to put Chavo somewhere, put him there.
Oh, thank God. That would be fantastic. What's wrong? I mean, Finley's perfect.
Or Booker.
Finley's a perfect. Well, Finley, because they had a feud in 06.
Right.
So it works perfectly.
Or even Booker, and maybe Kennedy beats Kane. You know,
yeah,
to get a win. But I can see why they had plans for Kennedy in 07. I mean, he looked really good here to start the year. Like his in-ring work has been way better than I remembered. Like, his real strong focus on the leg, you know, the way he's worked over his, like you said, the large, much larger challengers. He's looked realistic in taking them down and beating on them. And I love how aggressive he is. Anytime he's near them, he attacks that injured joint. And these two matches have been really, really good. I'll say that. The match of Batista, the one here. But yeah, they did him no favors. They did Lashley no favors either.
No. So Kennedy wins the match by DQ, but Lashley retains the ECW championship in what was going as a pretty decent match until like the last like 2 minutes, and then it just went, and this crowd has been abysmal. Definitely a different crowd than we saw in their last pay-per-view at WrestleMania 21, which they were pretty good. They're trash here. Yeah. Oh, fucking Grant Owens. Damn him. He couldn't find any new music tonight.
I found some.
I think Grant Owens should have an overnight radio show, and his name should be Douche Shade.
There you go.
Here's Douche Shade on the overnight. Here's 2:45 a.m. Here's Manfred Mann with Blocking the Sun with the Douche Shade. All right, let's get to our main event.
Not yet.
Oh, no, that's right. We have one more competition. That's
the great. Miz heads to the ring for a talent contest as the host. We get Extreme Exposé comes out first, Scott, and they dance and do the usual sex-step routine with Layla completely outclassing Brooke and Kelly. It's amazing to me.
God, she's amazing.
How awful Kelly is at dancing.
She was terrible.
My Lord, terrible. She's watching them the whole time and still fucking it up. It's like a little kid watching like her older brothers and sisters or cousins or whatever trying to dance. You know what I mean? It's like she's
awful.
Constantly glancing over and just a step behind, completely off key. It's amazing that she's got so little rhythm. Just nothing going on. I mean, like Elaine level awful dancing.
Yeah, so I remember saying that constantly on ECW that she was terrible. And she's gorgeous, but she was terrible. Oh, my God, you're fumbling over. Layla just owns it. Layla just owns it. Absolutely owns it.
So Jillian comes out to work her new gimmick, singing and butchering a song, and Miz calls her the chick version of William Hung. So a very dated reference at the time. Jillian, I thought, was good in this role. She, again, someone else that embraces the absurdity and really buys into the gimmick. She says all the women on the roster are talentless, and that brings out Candice, Maria, and Ariel to come out, and they get a giant cat fight going. The crowd actually wakes up for the first time in a while. And then we get the arrival of Hulk Hogan crossed with the Ultimate Warrior as Ashley gets her big entrance with her own music and pyro. You would literally think like Andre the Giant came fucking back to life and was walking out here the way they give her this entrance. Her Playboy cover drops from the ceiling. Ashley rips off her top and has Playboy bunnies painted over her tits. I thought it was a real waste of time. Jillian was funny. The crowd got into it. I thought it was absurd that they made Ashley to be the ace of this group. Like, all these women, and some are talented in there, have to stop and stand as, like, Ashley walks out with her theme and pyro. I mean, literally, like Steve Austin's coming out to the ring to clean house. And then stands there looking like an anorexic cokehead. And then, you know, whatever. The Playboy bunny tits was hot enough. But it just, the whole thing just was so stupid. Like, she's completely unbelievable in this role. We've seen her, what a shit wrestler she is. Can't really cut a promo. Doesn't seem to really understand the business at all. And just the way they presented her was like, what the fuck? And I usually don't get this worked up over this stuff. Like, whatever. It's the Diva division in the mid-2000s was just a disaster. But for some reason, it just aggravated me when she came out like Bruno Sammartino to the ring, like the king of the division, you know, strutting out while everyone else had to stand there and stand in awe as she came out. It was so stupid.
You want to talk about data references? What is this? February of 07? The fucking American Idol thing with William Hung was 2004. So he was – Miz didn't even have a dated reference properly.
Right. Was
so
Hung too? I feel like he was still kind of big for a couple years.
Oh, no, he was big. I mean, he was still around. He was doing – he actually did a couple albums. No, I think he – well, let's see. He did two albums, Inspiration, which was released April 6th, 2004, and then another album called Miracle, Happy Summer from William Hung, which came out in July of 2005, which sold an amazing 7,000 copies, which is more than Douche Shade would have done.
I don't know about that.
And then, of course – he did an extended play song. It must have been a duet with duet with Giante because it's called Hung for the Holidays.
Venice Hung for the Holidays.
Him and Giante must have done a combo. And then he did a single of We Are the Champions and a single for Achy Breaky Heart in 2004 and 2000. These references are like 2 years too late. Nice job, Miz. Big shitbag. You know what he's doing now? He ended his music career in
2011. I'm like, yeah.
He ended his career in 2011 when he accepted a job opportunity as a technical crime analyst for the L.A. County Sheriff's Department and decided to pursue law enforcement instead of music. What happened to this witness? She banged. She banged. for the holidays. All right. So there you go. And of course, this is right when Ashley was getting in Playboy. It's like the hottest she ever looked. Good segment, nice filler, but Miz was still unbelievably annoying at this point.
Ashley Sammartino was there to win the division.
Ashley Sammartino.
Hopefully she's in the Hall of Fame next year.
That's right.
Great run of early 07.
That's right. All right.
I remember when she finally beat Larry Zbyszko in that cage match. It was awesome.
I can see why
they really honored her here with this great moment.
Exactly. Okay. Time for our main event.
Remember her son David? That wasn't as good, though.
Yeah, David Ashley Sammartino. Remember that?
Yes. It's two for two. You usually don't make me laugh out loud on this.
Okay. We're trying to preserve your voice, so just we're trying to fill the gaps here. All right, it's time for the main event. And for the first time in history, JR, we take the top two already booked main events for WrestleMania and put them in one match. A good way to end the brand-specific pay-per-view era. How'd we get here?
I'm going to let you read it, and I want to test you and see if you've learned after all these years. If you can just read the fun fact without adding in extra words or telling the story, so I can rest. Go ahead.
Okay. On 129, Shawn Michaels walked to the ring and stated his case for challenging John Cena at WrestleMania. It was the night after Royal Rumble. If Undertaker did not, after some back and forth with Cena, Michaels and rated RKO, Mr. McMahon made a tag match between the four for later that night. In the main event, Cena and Michaels defeated RKO to win the tag titles. The show ended with the new champs arguing as Undertaker stared them down from the ramp. That week on SmackDown, both Batista and John Cena hit the ring and demanded that Undertaker come down and make his choice. Taker came out, but before he decided, Shawn Michaels came down and dared Taker to put his Rumble win on the line in a singles match with him. Again, before Taker could answer, he was interrupted, this time by Mr. McMahon. McMahon told Michaels that he didn't care. I don't care what your wishes were. And that at No Way Out, Michaels and Cena would team up to face Undertaker and Batista. On 2-5, Batista, Cena, and Bobby Lashley all came to the ring where Taker finally made the decision and chose to challenge Batista at WrestleMania 23. Michaels, Edge, and Orton then came out and all challenged Cena for his title at Mania. McMahon followed and said the three men would face off later in the show to determine who would get the Mania slot. Michaels would pin Orton and earn the chance to face Cena for the WWE title in Motown. Later that week, Undertaker and Batista had a stare down in the ring after Batista defeated Mr. Kennedy. On the special 215 Raw, the one I mentioned earlier, Batista, Michaels, Cena, and Taker teamed to defeat Edge, Orton, Kennedy, and MVP. After the match, Taker took out Michaels with a choke slam, and Batista dropped Cena with a Batista bomb. Finally, on SmackDown, Batista and Taker defeated Rated RKO. After the bout, Michaels dropped Taker with a super kick, and Cena hit Batista with an FU to make up for the to get back after the moves on Raw. And there we go.
All right. Maybe I'll draft you back in to start reading these things again. That was good. You've taken a few years and really practiced. So.
Skip the adjectives. Yeah.
Back right down to the minor league. So I may start divvying those up a little bit more. Say my voice every week.
There you go. All right. Now give us your full.
I can do more singing in my free time.
Full throated analysis here, just like JBL. Just do the whole thing. And there's your match, folks.
All right, loaded main event to help push Mania's main event. Usual doing the tag champs that don't get along trope, broke out on the Raw side. I didn't think that was really needed. Like, I didn't think they needed the belts to make this thing work. smart main event, though, here with tons of star power, nice mix of talent. We don't always see these guys cross paths. Michael's still using the DX music and look. The crowd is alive for all the entrances, and that, to me, Scott, is a credit to the star-powered main event. Because they have been dead all night, and now all of a sudden they are wide awake. Cena and Batista open things up with a back and forth of heavy blows and the crowd favoring Batista early. Batista gets a jackhammer for two, but Cena slings him into the post shoulder first to turn the tide. Michaels comes back in and chops away, but Batista overpowers him and tags in Taker. Taker works the arm and hits old school, but Michaels eventually comes back with a back elbow, chops and punches. Batista comes back in and controls the arm a bit and then whiffs on an elbow drop. Allowing Cena to tag in, and he gets booed. Cena beats on Batista, who breaks free to tag Taker. Taker hammers away and buries a knee to the gut, but Cena blocks old school with a superplex. Cena tries to punch away, but Taker mows him down with a clothesline and then misses an elbow, allowing Cena to tag out. Michael strikes first, but Taker grabs him by the throat to cut him off and then press slams him to the floor. Taker and Batista take turns beating on Shawn, slinging him across the ring and overpowering him. Taker misses a charging boot in the corner, but Michaels is too worn out to tag. Taker hits a side slam and makes a tag, and Batista keeps mauling Michaels, picking up near falls. Shawn gets a desperation DDT and makes a tag. The crowd boos Cena as he runs through Batista, getting a top rope leg drop for a near fall. Cena takes out Taker as well, clotheslining him to the floor and then hitting a spinning slam and five-knuckle shuffle on Batista. JBL's pretty much been calling the match on his own, like we mentioned, as Cole's voice is just gone. Taker breaks up a Cena FU and Michaels knocks him to the floor and then dives into him, but Taker catches him and runs him into the post. Batista loads up Cena for the Batista bomb, but Michaels takes his leg out to block it. Michaels and Cena pelt Batista with offense, picking him up some near falls, but unable to finish him off. Michaels and Cena trade off front face locks to wear Batista down, but after Batista powers out, Cena takes him down to an STFU. The crowd boos loudly until Taker comes back in to break the hold. Michaels hits the top rope elbow, but Batista ducks Sweet Chin Music and hits a swinging slam and tags in Taker as Michaels tags Cena. Crowd erupts as Cena and Taker meet in the middle of the ring and clobber each other. Taker takes over and hits a snake eyes and a boot to Shawn and a flying shoulder block to Cena. Batista hits Shawn with a spine buster and Taker hits Cena with a choke slam. And then Batista turns and hits on a Taker with a spine buster to booze. Batista watches from ringside as Michaels hits Sweet Chin Music and Cena hits the FU on Taker for the win. I thought this was a really strong main event. The heat segments on both sides flew to work from everyone involved. The finish was real good. I thought it made a lot of sense. Everyone looked strong. The match added a lot of intrigue for Mania. I thought JBL was fine being forced to call everything alone. He does a nice job hammering home that Batista has a chip on his shoulder when it comes to Taker and the streak and Mania, that he wants to prove everyone wrong. And I think it's a good sign that the co-brand pay-per-views will have a lot more star power, marking the end of the single brand experiment. But the crowd, again, sucked all night, but we're good here for this match. And I thought this was a great main event. I think it ends up being a really strong show on the back of this main event and a solid undercard.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Step one, Shawn Michaels, still comes out to the DX music, which I thought was interesting. He did have a DX t-shirt on, but he is eschewed the DX chaps and went back to his regular red and white, chaps. But he was kind of like a DX.
Are on the floor next to your bed, Chris Golo.
Shawn's too scared. Never mind. He's kind of in a hybrid. He's green, he's red, he's in the post-Christmas season, I guess.
Medea. He's fired
Medea.
Up.
Step two, Cole's voice, as you mentioned, is pretty much gone. I mean, he just can't do anything. So JBL's pretty much solo for the last, like, 13 minutes of this match. And Cole has just enough left to sign them off at the end of the show. And step three, big credit to these guys for taking what in essence was, let's be honest, JR, you could consider this like a go-home Raw match at first glance. But they made it feel pay-per-view. So I got to give all four guys, Cena, Taker, Batista, and Shawn, a credit for really amping this up and making it more than just, you know, tonight on Raw, all four Mania participants. You know, they could have just done this, you know, on the go-home Raw. But they made it feel like a big pay-per-view match. So I applaud all four guys for making it feel that special. But I have an extra step, and it's more of a question to you.
Ooh, a rare fourth step.
Fourth step. Did Batista have to leave Taker high and dry? Do we really have to go there?
Yes. Yes.
During the match?
Yes.
Couldn't they just win it and then he does it? Like, do
no.
we have to have, because we have four baby faces here. Did we have to put lines in the, no pun intended, lines in the sand for these matches, even though it's four baby faces? I'm not disagreeing or disagreeing. I'm just asking the question. I'm not taking a stance. I'm just curious your thoughts.
Question. No, I thought it was a good idea. I liked it. Because it adds intrigue. Like, Batista is pissed. They don't have the tag titles to defend. They don't care. They just want to go out and, you know, they're being forced to tag. Batista's super pissed because Undertaker, you know, won the Rumble and chose him. He's undefeated at Mania. Batista's being overlooked. Can he end the streak? Yeah, he's sending a message to Taker. Like, fuck you. Like, I'm going to beat you at your own show. Like, I thought it was fine. I thought it added some nice intrigue. Like,
okay.
I wanted to see some dissension. And, you know, Shawn and Cena kept it together because they're the tag champs. Less animosity. But I liked it. I like seeing Batista have that chip. And I thought JBL did a nice job on commentary calling it.
The way you said that. And then Taker said, and then Batista said, fuck you, daddy. Fuck you,
right?
Taker.
Fuck you.
Bitch.
I'm reading my poetry on a Taker.
Exactly. I am the animal. Okay, I'm just curious. I was fine either way with it, but I was a little surprised that they actually did that for the match, but that's fine. Now, my point being, as you mentioned, we're talking about backtracking because I don't want to tip our hand earlier in the show. We talk about SmackDown's tag division and how Raw's seems a little more stable. Meanwhile, the last two tag team champions are four singles guys.
Right.
And the tag team champions on SmackDown are actually a pretty damn good tag team. They just have no challengers. It's really strange. Kind of like Warrior in 90. You know?
Right, but they're at least like building some depth up. You know what I mean? They're having other feuds and other fights, and there's more than two teams. And you're not just debuting a new team and immediately giving them title shots. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. So your SmackDown main event wins the match. Were you surprised, or did you not carry the weight? We're just hoping to be entertained.
Yeah, no, I thought it was fine. I mean, I liked the match itself. I wasn't surprised either way. You mean Raw won? Did you say SmackDown?
No, I said the SmackDown team won. But I'm saying the SmackDown main event team won? But I'm saying did you carry the way who won? Like, are you surprised?
What do you mean
that
the SmackDown main event team won?
I mean the Raw main event team. Okay. I don't know why I keep thinking Taker won. The Raw main event team won.
It's because we're on the same page. Yeah.
Did it matter to you either way?
No. No, the stories were within the team, so it didn't really matter who won the match. And the star power on top, like, this is a loaded match for this card. And they really let them go out, and they got it done. Like, no, I just thought top to bottom, it was a really good match. I don't think the finish mattered, per se, beyond the fact that they get across the story that Batista's not fucking around, and he's pissed off. And that Cena and Sean, you know, have their own distrust too, but were able to keep it together for this match. And even they were on the verge of losing until Batista turned. So, no, I thought it was well worked overall. Like, I don't think the outcome mattered here. And, you know, I think it was just a cool chance to see four top stars, guys that maybe necessarily didn't, you know, ever cross paths too much in the past, like here and there. But, like, Cena Taker, we haven't seen in a long time. Cena Batista were teammates in December, but haven't really fought. You know, Michaels Batista's kind of new. So it was kind of a nice treat of a match, I thought. And it paid off the Rumble a little bit, too, with Shawn and Taker going at it again. So I thought it was a really strong match. And, again, I thought it was a really good card. Surprisingly fun and better than you would think. Because nothing's bad. I mean, there's really nothing bad. Like, the undercard is all filled with at least good matches. The opener's really good. And I thought the main event was great.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. The Raw team won. Yeah, no, I thought it was a fantastic match, too. And, you know, winner was irrelevant. It was just a good main event to entertain us before we, you know, head on the final road to Motown. So there's No Way Out, 2007. Time now to open up the report card, JR.
And before that, Scott, I just want to remind everyone, if you want different view back at the show, one of the PTV and Rewind series led by Ben Morris looked back at this show. I think it was either earlier this year or last year. If you go to the index, PlaceMation.com, you can search it out. It was Glenn Butler, Ben Morris, Dan McGann, and Graham Cawthon. So a hell of a crew breaking down this show. So again, if you wanted a second listen or listen back and see what the dichotomy is between the two takes, go ahead and check that out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Of course, as we know now, we will go to our report card, which we're coming to the end, JR. Mm-hmm. This has been a fantastic experiment. We're, of course, going to continue it. And also down the line, we will do part two of our retro or retconning, if you will, our pay-per-view report cards from the past, too. We have that coming up soon. All right. 14 shows so far. We have two left, so here's this one. Is this better, your opinion, than No Mercy?
I think so.
Okay. Is it better than New Year's Revolution?
Yeah.
Should be fresh in your head.
It's not, but yeah.
Okay. Is it better than SummerSlam? I don't think so.
No.
Because, I mean, those two matches are great. All
right,
so we'll put
it right there.
All right, so No Way Out is sixth. So with one
surprising, though, I never would have guessed that would be sixth heading in.
I know. I was surprised, too, when you said it was better than No Mercy. All right, so here is the card, or the pay-per-view rank so far, with one match to go, one pay-per-view left to put. Vengeance, Cyber Sunday. This is bottom to top. Vengeance, which still sucks. Cyber Sunday, December to Dismember, Survivor Series, Backlash, Great American Bash, Armageddon, No Mercy, New Year's Revolution, No Way Out, SummerSlam, Judgment Day, Unforgiven, One Night Stand, and at the top, the Royal Rumble. I don't think any match on the show was as bad as the four under worst match. I mean, there wasn't anything on the show that was unbelievably dreadful. No. So we still have only four matches under worst match. The Braun Panties match from Great American Bash, Lita versus Mickie James from Cyber Sunday, Kane and Kane from Vengeance and Kane Big Show from Backlash is number one.
That holds up.
All right. Would you put the main event anywhere on our best match list? Let me go down the. Let me start in the middle.
Yeah, give me the bottom here.
All right.
Well, give me the bottom.
The bottom?
From the bottom, then we're here.
Okay. All right. Is it better than London and Kendrick versus the Pitbulls from Great American Bash?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it better than DX versus the McMahons and Big Show from Unforgiven, The Cell?
What's after that?
The next one would be Triple H, Edge, and Cena from Backlash.
What's after that?
Regal, Benoit, No Mercy.
I think I would just put it over above that Pitbulls match and leave it there.
Okay, so down here. All right, so...
I mean, no shame. That's still pretty high. What's that, top 13 or whatever we're at?
No, let me type it and then I will let you know. Shawn Michaels versus Douche and Domino. Batista and Undertaker. No way out. All right, so there's 1, 2, 5, 10, 14 out of 15.
Okay, yeah, so not bad. It's in the top 15 matches of the year for now.
Yeah, for now.
We'll see next episode.
So, London and Kendrick versus Pitbulls, Great American Bash. Our main event just now from No Way Out. DX versus McMahon's versus Big Show, and the Big Show from Unforgiven in the Cell. Triple H versus Edge versus Cena from Backlash. Regal versus Benoit from No Mercy. No, they're not on here. Edge versus Cena from SummerSlam. Foley versus Flair from SummerSlam, the I Quit match. London and Kendrick versus the Hardys versus Regal and Taylor versus Eminem from Armageddon, the ladder match where Mercury loses his face. Cena versus Umaga from New Year's Revolution. Benoit versus Finlay from Judgment Day. The Royal Rumble match itself from the Rumble. Edge Foley Lita versus Dreamer Funk Beulah from One Night Stand, Extreme Rules. Cena versus RVD from One Night Stand, Extreme Rules. Edge versus Cena from Unforgiven, the TLC. And at the top of the list right now, tough to beat. Cena versus Umaga, Last Man Standing from the Royal Rumble. I don't know if there's any match left in that last show that'll touch it.
There's a couple of
good candidates, a couple of very strong candidates on that show, but we'll get there. So there you go. There is No Way Out 2007 and our updated report card.
Woo!
Woo-hoo! One show left in the report card.
Mm-hmm.
The big one. The big one. The final exam, if you will. Yes, baby.
All right. So we are off next week, Scott.
Yes.
Some travel going on, so we will not be here. But we wanted to squeeze this one in despite the sickness, so hope everyone enjoyed it. Then... Halloween night, we will be back with our special Halloween episode.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure to tune in for that. It's always a spooky, fun, good time.
It is.
The week after that, hopefully, November 7th, we will be back with WrestleMania 23. And we hope to have a guest on with us for that. And then we'll pick it up from there. Like you said, Scott, we want to kind of do our back end of our pay-per-view calendar year in reviews to wrap. Mm-hmm. What did we leave off? Was it 98?
97? Yes, 97. We stopped at 97. So 98 to 06.
Yep, we'll be doing that. And then we'll pick up the creative year with Backlash, hopefully towards the end of November. So what you need to know for the immediate future, next week, no show. And then on the 31st will be our Halloween show on Halloween night. So until then, I'm going to go rest my voice.
Yes.
So I don't sound as spooky myself. But for Scott, I'm Nick Papagiorgio. We're out. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Everyone have a great time. Enjoy your Halloween festivities. I'll talk to you on Halloween night.
Save us a couple of peanut butter cups.
Sowins off
on
freak.
The Sabbath.
This is scary.
Break it down.
I was working late on my Haftorah when I heard a knock on my bedroom door. I opened it up, and to my surprise, there was a werewolf standing there with glowing gold eyes. He says, tomorrow, my son, you will be a man. But tonight's the time to join the wolfing clan. Tomorrow you will stand at the beamer and pray. But tonight, let's gaze at the moon and bathe. Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves. Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
All right, that was great, Trey. Okay, it's over. That's a wrap.
Oh. The next day, what
happened. The Toma didn't teach. Oh, I got up in front of everyone to give my little speech. Then my teeth turned into fangs and my nails into claws. And I nearly dropped the Torah when my hands turned into paws. I growled and I roared and my rabbi did as well. It was a rocking werewolf zoo at Temple Beth Emanuel.
Hey man, where'd you learn all these Jewish words?
My manager, Harvey Lemmings. Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
I just don't think this, the idea of the song can sustain itself for that long. It seems a little sweaty now, so.
This whole premise is sweaty. We had a reception at the Larchmont Country Club. They served a real nice brisket and an 8-foot party sub. I danced with my cousins, I got money from my folks. Had a lot of fun making circumcision jokes. Then I remembered the premise of my song. I was at a nice reception, but the werewolf part was gone. So we pulled ourselves together and we're wolfmen again. Just in time for monster fight to begin. No. All the country club employees were brain-sucking pack, who had all turned into zombies and were on the attack. No. So we fought them and some Draculas and Frankensteins too. Cause you gotta love bar mitzvah even if you're not a...
There's no such thing as Frankensteins.
Bar mitzvah, spooky, scary.
No plural.
Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves. Werewolf bar mitzvah, kooky, hairy. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
I don't want this. I don't like this. This is scary. Turning into werewolves and stuff. You know? I don't know, Trey. I'm not feeling it. This ain't no dick in a box. Mazel tov.